This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is On Driven, Joy 94.9 multicultural program with Leo and Hugh. The On Driven Bill is a symbol used across Australia to represent multiculturalism, anti-racism and international understanding. At Joy 94.9, On Driven represents peace and understanding in a multicultural GLBTI community. On today's show, we have Justin. Justin's going to talk about his background, being overweight growing up, coming out, and what effect it has on his parents to find out that both him and his sister are gay. Along with lots of other things, we're going to enjoy a nice chat with Justin today.
You're on Joy 94.9, the Orange Ribbon program, on a gorgeous Saturday afternoon with Hugh and Leo. That was, of course, MC Mariah Carey with Breakdown from her Butterfly album. We're joined in the studio by Justin. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Leo.
Now, why that track for Mariah?
Mariah Carey is my equal favourite artist, along with Tori Amos, but I haven't actually picked any Tori songs today. But that song is from my favourite album of hers as well, Butterfly. And a lot of people, as we were talking about earlier, appreciate the early Mariah Carey music. And that music was heavily influenced by her then-husband, Tommy Mottola, the Sony music boss. And the Butterfly album came out, I think, just after they divorced. And it was sort of her release to do music that she felt was more her style. So in that sense, it's kind of like her own coming out. And so I thought that song would be conveniently, since it's also my favourite song, relevant for this show.
Wow, you know a lot about her.
Just a tad, yeah.
Just a tad.
A fellow Mariah fan, I'm very happy with that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And we agree that the some of the add-on artists aren't perhaps necessary, but if you sort of sift between them, you'll find the true Mariah still sitting in the background.
Justin, let's talk about you.
Okay.
Start off by telling us where you come from.
So I am fairly multicultural, I'd say. I was born in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and my family moved to Adelaide when I was nearly 3 years old. And I lived in Adelaide until early 2000 when I moved here to Melbourne.
Right.
So my parents and my younger sister are still in Adelaide.
Okay.
And I'm here now. But interestingly, yes, born in Malaysia, but I'm actually of Indian background.
Indian? Where about in India?
South of India, so Tamil Nadu. So I think even my parents and grandparents were born in Malaysia, so our Malaysian heritage, I guess, goes quite deep, but India before that.
Yeah, because people from South India are a lot darker than you, aren't they?
I think so, yeah. Yes. The Northern Indians tend to be fairer, but I'm South, but I think maybe it's the Malaysian influence that I'm not as dark as some.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll try not to take that as a compliment. Many Indians would, so I'm just going to not comment on that.
So what's it like growing up in the city of churches, Adelaide? It's a beautiful place.
Adelaide's a beautifully flat city. I don't mean culturally, I just mean in terms of its architecture and its layout. Mm. It's a very easy city to grow up in. It's a beautifully peaceful, clean, relatively vibrant city. It just doesn't have, I guess, the variety of activity that some of the bigger cities like Melbourne and Sydney would have.
So as a child, what would you normally do when you're growing up? Was it go to the parks? Was it were you involved in sport groups or clubs or pocket friends? And
You certainly can. My family is fortunate. Our house basically fronted just a little
reserve.
Yes, a reserve. Thank you. And so we had a playground there and like a basketball court. Not that I like playing basketball, but we used to have hits of tennis against the wall. And so my childhood was, I wouldn't say fairly active. I was almost determined to be quite inactive, actually, but my sister had other ideas, so she would drag me out to the park to play basically any sport that she knew of, and any sporting material she could get her hands on, such as baseball mitts and gloves and cricket bats and everything, and we would play together, and I would sort of go into it grudgingly, but I kind of appreciate the introduction.
One of the things you told us was that you're a placid child.
Yes.
And anything your sister said to you, you just went along with and did.
She's not going to like my saying this, but no, from what I've been told by my sister and cousins is that they would play with me as we did as children, and then in one instance, we were playing a game and they dropped me on my head, I think, while carrying me around in a blanket. It wasn't torture or anything. It was just some game. And I wanted to cry, and I was specifically warned against it because I didn't want to get in trouble. And so I sat quietly and didn't cry.
That was very nice of you.
I think so, yes. And I think that placidity has actually stuck with me over the years. I think I manage my... I don't think I have a temper. I manage my anger and stress quite well. And so it's a positive attribute.
So you're one of those people that if you're angry or really pissed off about something, you'll just keep it to yourself. But everyone around you knows something's going on.
I'd say... I'm very good at engaging my friends in what's going on in my life. So if I'm angry about something, they'll know because I'll tell them and I'll flit about, and then I get the actual rage out by singing. So Mariah's come very much in handy. Yeah, so it's that's the best way I can manage that sort of anger.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Leo and Hugh. And our guest today is Justin, who originally comes from Adelaide. And before the break, Justin, you were talking about being placid when you were a child.
Yes.
But there was a byproduct to that, wasn't there?
There was. Due to my more reserved, placid nature, I wasn't, as I mentioned, as active as other boys. And so from the time I think I was five, starting school, I'd see all the boys playing soccer on the oval and falling down. And it didn't make much sense to me why you'd voluntarily want to fall over and hurt yourself. And so I tended to stay out of those. And I sat down and I just read books and did my own thing. And I think as a consequence of that, I was a fat kid. So, and that label pretty much stuck with me throughout school, including high school. And any of my work colleagues would tell you that I'm convinced it still sticks with me. So I have a unique skill to be able to turn any comment into a fat comment. So,
because you're not fat now. I have to say to the listener, I refrain
from answering that comment, actually.
I mean, I can still relate to this because when I was growing up, it was the same thing. I used to watch people playing sport on the field, and I would just be sitting with a book or in the library or anything but being on the field. I hated sport. Yep. And I can relate to that. I think there's a lot of people out there that have gone through that. So did you know that you were gay at that time? Did you have any inklings? Did you feel any different? Were people teasing you? Did you go through the whole bullying thing?
No, I mean, if I did go through any bullying that might have been related to perhaps my more effeminate characteristics and my placid nature, I would have assumed it was related to my weight.
Weight, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that acted as a defense almost.
Was anyone else in your family overweight, or were you the only one?
I don't think any of us were particularly skinny, but I was the fat one. There was no one else who was overweight officially. My dad's like a beanpole, so I don't know how that
So doing all this reading, getting fat and reading,
yes.
How were you at school?
I was quite successful at school, particularly primary school. I guess I was fairly academic, and I enjoyed learning. High school, I found I was a bit more middle of the road, and I, you know, applied myself a lot, and I did well, but I was sort of very good at a lot of subjects, but not the best at any of them. And so I actually earned myself the application award 4 out of 5 years.
Yeah, I've never heard this before.
It's something that perhaps is exclusive to my school, but it meant that you sort of ranked in the top five for each. For each subject.
That's great.
Or thereabouts, at least for a few subjects. And so that showed that I was always up there, but never quite at the top.
Because a lot of people are really good at English, but not good at maths. And it's really hard to find someone that's good at maths and English. You know, but to be good at pretty okay with everything is quite a good, good thing.
Yeah, well, maths kind of dropped away towards the end. Enjoy that.
It always does.
Yeah. I had an interesting sort of complete shift in what I was studying when I started year 11. I thought that I wanted to be a doctor. I actually wanted to be a psychiatrist. And I tried to convince myself that that was more to do with wanting to help people. But really, I just wanted the fancy wood desk, mahogany and the lamp and everything. And so I studied the subjects that you needed to, chemistry, physics and maths. And I absolutely hated them. And I got I nearly failed my mid-year exam in chemistry and physics. And I decided to drop both of them, and I picked up biology because you still had to do a science, and drama. And not surprisingly, drama ended up being my best subject in year 12.
So talking of drama, did you involve in any of the school plays or,
yes,
or socials and stuff? What happened
so
with that?
I was a lead role in one of my year 8 plays, I remember, and then sort of in the background for a number of other plays, mm-hmm, and musicals that we did throughout school. And then I took on more of my singing than I did with acting as years went on. So I had a few choir groups that were at school.
Okay. Well, so I was going to say to you, what did you sing?
Part of there was a liturgical choir, so I sang religious songs. And then we had a senior vocal ensemble, which was kind of jazz influenced, but not so much solo. They were all choral ensemble.
Right.
When you were at home, what did you just love belting out?
Oh, okay. Well, I think that's an easy one to answer. So Mariah featured regularly. I once hit one of her high notes, actually.
I can relate to that.
When my voice was breaking, it was doing all sorts of weird things, and it was Mariah Carey's "Oh Holy Night" during Christmas, and I hit the high note.
Oh, wow.
It happened once, but it did happen.
So. Now, one of the things you talked about was your cat.
Yes.
You had your cat from the age of 4 to 21, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, so 17 years.
Yeah, that's quite an old cat.
Yes, she was the family cat, but she was basically my cat because she stayed in my room pretty much all day because no one else would have her. My sister's allergic, but she, because I had her from such a young age, like I basically didn't know my childhood without her. So,
yeah,
I was very, very
close. So you basically grew up with her?
Yes. Absolutely. Her name was Whiskey. And then, putting her down when she was just too old was a hard thing. But
Did you find that having this cat, that the cat substituted real people?
Possibly. I honestly don't think I thought about it. But certainly I would come home from school and I would be so thrilled to see her, curled up on my bed. So I would say she was as close a friend, even though she hated affection and tried to scratch me when I did certain things. But, she's... I wouldn't say that I didn't have friends, but I didn't have many close ones, and I would count her as a special figure.
Because at school, if you didn't get involved with sports, and you wouldn't be mixing with the other guys as much. And
yeah, there wasn't a great deal of camaraderie, I suppose, at that age that I enjoyed, not with the boys. And I guess primary school, I was relatively on my own. And in high school, we actually went co-educational from year 9 onwards, and so more. We never had an equal balance of male and female, but it was nice having the females there, who were easier to relate to.
Right, right. And when did you think about the fact that you may be gay? Was it at school? Or?
It was. I guess typical adolescence, a couple of boys would find an adult magazine that would come into their hands. And I remember a friend I had, we used to walk home from school together, and he had one of those magazines and he was showing me, and I was just looking, and then he exclaimed, he goes, "Why are you always looking at the pictures with the guys in them?" And I said, "I don't think I am." I didn't make any comment on there, but it was unconsciously registering that I might be gay, but I didn't. I wasn't trying to address it at that point.
It was just something.
You're probably too young at the time to sort of know what that is that you're feeling, and you just, so you had a lot of girlfriends in high school, like a lot of like girlfriends, like you more so than guy friends.
We had a good friendship circle which had a mix of guys and girls, including my best friend, who I'll talk about later, I guess. So I'd say it was a fairly equal balance, but I wasn't friends with the more macho, the sporty guys.
One of the things we've talked about sports, and you said you hated sports.
Yeah,
but you got into tennis.
I did. I wouldn't say I hated sports. I certainly didn't enjoy most of the sports that I was sort of playing on occasion, cricket and basketball. And tennis, I never disliked. I quite liked it, in fact, but I just wasn't any good. My sister was a very successful tennis player, and so I'd drag along and with her on Saturday mornings and try to hit the ball on occasion. And then... honestly, something very strange happened in year 10, the beginning, 1997 it was, and the TV was on the background, and it was a lead-in tournament to the Australian Open, and I remember just watching, it happened to be who became my favourite player, and it just interested me. I don't know why, it just did, and I started to get more involved watching all the Australian Open and really enjoyed it, and so I picked up the racket again, and when it had a hit against the back wall, and I did this throughout the year, and I... significantly improved. And as a result, a couple of my friends had tennis courts in their backyards, and we had like summer parties over Christmas, and I would have a hit on their tennis court, and my now best friend, he was a very good tennis player. I was a C grade, he was A grade, and he noticed that I had some ability. And so he said, oh, we should have a hit one weekend together. So we did, and the rest is history, really.
Right. And consequently, playing tennis, you started to lose weight as well.
Yes. So I think it was in year 12 I dropped about 10 to 15 kilos.
Wow.
Wow, that was fantastic.
Yeah, so I enjoyed year 12 in the end, actually.
Because when you're losing weight, I mean, for you, was it intentional? Or were you saying, okay, I'm going to make sure I eat properly?
No.
And it was just happened naturally.
I really don't think I ever ate badly. I think it was mostly due to inactivity.
Yeah.
And so suddenly this activity that was quite physical, it didn't seem like exercise because I loved it.
Yeah.
And so the weight just dropped off. And my mum insisted I was trying to starve myself, but I really wasn't.
As mothers do.
Yes.
Yeah.
And but Indian mothers in particular.
Indian
you're not
mothers,
eating, then something's wrong and you're directly insulting them. So
at the time, did you have, when the whole tennis thing was happening, did you ever think that maybe this would be a career that you could maybe go into? Or was it mainly a hobby that
No, my dad quashed that for me very early on, actually. I just asked an innocent question when we were driving my sister to tennis and I said, oh, Dad, do you think I could be a tennis player? And he just said, no. But I bless him for his candor. He was he wouldn't beat around the bush.
You're on Joy 94.9. Owen Dribben on a gorgeous Saturday afternoon, and our special guest Justin has chosen the music today, including that one by Björk.
Yes.
What was that one?
That's Hyper Ballad off the Post album. I think it was 1994. That's one of my favorite tracks as well. It's a good balance of slow, not quite ballady music, but then the dance music kicks in very late in the piece, and I think it's beautifully done, and it's an understated hit.
She always has some weird music, doesn't she?
She does.
You know,
I enjoy
her music.
She's most famously known, I guess, in Australia, apart from the Swan Dress that she turned up in, for It's Oh So Quiet, which is off the same album. And even she acknowledges that that is not one of her preferred songs.
No.
And so for fans of hers, I think they'll appreciate songs like that one.
Talking of music, we've got a couple of emails that have come through. One came through earlier about Mariah, and Razorboy has said, totally agree with you about Mariah. Her Butterfly album is her best album, The Roof, My All, whatever you call. God, I miss those old days when she sang a melody. So, yeah, fellow Mariah fans are out there. And, of course, your lovely sister Chris has also messaged in as well. So, big hi to you, Chris. We interviewed her a few months ago on the show and shared her story. And you guys are flatmates.
Yes, we are. Before I get to that, can I give Razor Boy my email? Is that appropriate? No?
We can after the show.
It's always nice to connect with a fellow.
It's not a dated agency, Justin.
No, this is not.
I was misled, my sister.
It's good thing anyway, nice and professional.
Sorry. Yes, my sister and I do flat together, I suppose. We've been living together since I've moved to Melbourne in 2007. We lived in another place and had a couple of housemates, but now it's just us two.
I don't know if I could share a flat with my sister, and I mean that in a nice way, but my sister's my sister, you know.
Our relationship is unique. We're nearly 3 years apart, but many people think of us as twins. I mean, we sort of follow each other most places. So as of yet, we haven't had a
Being your older sister, does she look out for you?
She does. I have to say she's the decision maker, and I'm very happy with that. I act as a support.
Okay.
That's our dynamic, and it works.
Good.
Now, talking of Melbourne, of course, you moved to Melbourne with your sister. Melbourne is famous for shopping, and you love shopping, don't you?
I do. I was doing that before I got here. I have a big event coming up, namely my 30th. And so
that's very good of you to give your age over the waves.
Well, they can't see my face, so they can't.
So you're going to hit those shops.
So I've been looking for birthday outfits because there's a few events happening. So, yeah, I do. There's few things in life that give me greater joy than just I can spend 2 days nonstop just going from shop to shop.
So what do you shop for? Is it clothes, shoes, is it accessories? Is it
it's clothes,
DVDs, CDs?
Shoes. There's one thing that just doesn't do it for me is electronics. So, I mean, I love my DVDs and, like, I love movies and music, but I can walk past the Apple store with, you know, to have no desire to go in there because I mostly make electronic things screw up and blow up. So my friends will vouch for that. But, yes, mostly clothes and food shopping and, you know, homewares shopping, and one day it'll be car shopping, hopefully.
You know, there's one thing I hate and it's shopping.
Interesting.
I could never. I hate going into a store and looking through clothes and clothes and clothes. I just can't imagine anyone enjoying that.
But. Are you a try-oner? Do you try things on?
Yes, I do. Yeah. But I'm equally happy just shifting through racks.
Because some of my friends, they try on clothes and some buy stuff and they're big return freaks. If it doesn't fit, they just return it. Because I want to try it on in the shop and make sure.
I actually know someone who goes into designer shops, puts on the clothes and then takes a photograph of himself with the clothes on and then puts the clothes back.
You.
For the purpose
of... You should
stop
doing that, Hugh.
I don't... Anyway, and the person who's listening knows who they are if they're listening. That is. Justin, just let's go back a step. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the tennis that you got involved in and you said you came quite good. But tell us what happened.
Well, I started to really enjoy the tennis and I got quite good at it. And my best friend and I started playing pretty much every weekend. And it was always a social thing, though. And then I actually participated in the gay and lesbian tennis group in Adelaide.
Okay. What's it called?
I don't think it has a name.
No name.
Because there was only about 12 members.
Oh, okay.
It's a very small group. But then shortly afterwards, I moved to Melbourne. And I happened to, I looked up just tennis in my area because I was living in St Kilda East and saw Vic Tennis, the Gay and Lesbian Tennis Association in Armidale.
Mm.
And I said to my sister, that's not far from us, so I might drive down and have a look. And that was in, I think, May or June of 2007. And I found that group and became a regular participating member in our social and official competition. And that's gone from strength to strength, and I'm now actually the president of the organization.
Wow, that's good. So, do you want to give the email address?
Sure. If anyone is listening and interested in participating in tennis, it's we stand by our ethos of fun, fitness and friendship, and the email address is victennis1@gmail.com.
Okay.
And we'll put that on our Facebook as well.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Leo and Hugh, and our guest today is Justin. Justin, tell us about your music.
That is a song called The Time Is Now by a brilliant British outfit, actually, Maloko. And the lead singer, Roisin Murphy, she's just a very individual, very charismatic lead singer with some interesting taste. But apart from loving that song, it's in my top 10, I think there's a message in that I'm hoping to kind of elaborate on eventually. You know, give yourself up to the moment, the time is now, because anybody would tell you I'm not the most spontaneous person. I'm quite a bit of a planner. And I think at some point I'll need to embrace that message.
So you've got to plan everything in your head. And yes. How it's going to happen, when it's going to happen.
Oh, God, we're like twins. I'm the same.
Are you?
Well, when people I'm say, not... you know, what are you doing this Saturday night? I'm like, you needed to ask me that 2.5 months ago.
I say the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, I don't do spur of the moment things.
So what happens if a guy comes along and goes, Justin, will you come out for a drink with me?
Well, we're still waiting for that to happen here. So, I'll cross that bridge.
Yeah,
if
I know,
and when
I know
it
the
comes.
Feeling.
So that leads us into obviously the next important part, your coming out story.
Right.
How did that evolve?
That was a natural occurrence. It was nothing that I premeditated. I was 16. I was going through a lot of pressure at the time from not enjoying my schooling, as I mentioned earlier, what I was studying. I was still dealing, I think I was at my heaviest relative to my age at the time.
Sorry to interrupt you, but when you say heaviest,
yes,
what are we talking about?
I think I was nearly 90 kilos for a 16-year-old. So, I was quite large. And I had an infatuation with a friend at school. I won't enter too much into that. I don't think it was a sexual thing. It was just I wanted to be like him, and it was a lot of pressure. And I think being gay was one of those pressures that I'd pushed to the back of my head.
At 16, was that when you realized you were gay?
I knew that I was at that point only attracted to men sexually, and nothing had happened to force me to prove that. It was honestly an unconscious thought that was just there, and at one point all these pressures simply erupted, and they manifested themselves in my saying, I'm gay. That's what.
At this point, Justin, did you know that your sister was gay?
No.
No.
No, not at all. She only came out several years later.
Oh, okay.
And so you bit into it.
I did. Yes, definitely.
So how did your mum and dad react to the news?
So I came out because I'd got emotional about something and my mum was talking to me and I just, in amid tears, I blurted it out. I said, I'm gay. And she ran and got my sister immediately because she knew we were close even then. And Chris came in and we immediately was trying to console me. And I said to, you know, Mum, look, I said, I don't know. I said, it's just something I'm feeling. And, you know, she tried to say, no, well, you can't be. There wasn't any rage. There was just denial, I guess. And my sister said, you know, we should talk about it. If he needs to go see someone, we can talk about it. It wasn't, again, about any notion of it's being wrong, at least not from my sister. But I was just literally didn't even, it was almost an out-of-body experience. It just inadvertently came out, no pun intended. And I didn't want to act on it at the point. I said, I'm too young. I don't understand this. I said, it's just what I'm feeling. And I've just said it. And I said, don't tell Dad specifically. So, of course, 3 days later, I was being picked up from drama rehearsal. They should have known then, but anyway. And we didn't drive home. We kept driving somewhere else. And I said, Dad, where are we going? He said, oh, we're just going to have a talk. And I knew then that the cat was out of the bag. He spoke to me and he said, okay, son, you know, Mum told me what you'd said and you're not gay. And I said, okay, good, why? And he said, well, at school I enjoyed sewing. And I said, that's good. I mean, he made an automatic correlation with those activities and homosexuality. But again, he didn't approach with any sort of anger or hatred. He was really trying to talk me through, but he was utterly convinced that I wasn't gay. And he said, and he was almost proud of himself at the end, and he said, oh, and the final reason I know you're not gay is because you like whiskey. Whiskey, of course, being the cat that I was very close to.
Okay.
And I said, yes, and what's your point? And he said, and cats are very feminine animals. And it was at that point I realized he's probably not going to understand.
He was putting a wall up.
He was.
Yeah.
So now he's obviously okay with that.
Yes. Look, admittedly, it's not something we discuss too openly, but the way I see it is, being of an Indian Catholic family, my dad could have reacted very, very differently. And throughout, whether we spoke about it or not, he's never shown me anything but support for anything that I've wanted to do. And the same goes with my sister. And, you know, he's shown us this unconditional love. And that obviously made the coming out process a lot easier.
And when she came out, you offered your support to her, obviously.
I did. It was a shock and it almost would have seemed
did you ever,
like...
Did you ever suspect that your sister was gay?
No. She threw us all off the scent because she loved her sports at... I mean, I'm going to use some stereotypes here, I know, but she loved her sports during school and when we were growing up, but at the same time she loved her Beverly Hills 90210 boys. She had Luke Perry and Jason Priestley all over her wall. And then she went overseas after when she was finished uni, and she came back and she was into her clothes and her fashion and her makeup, and then she was gay.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Well, how did your parents take it?
I know my mum was in a bit of disbelief.
Yeah.
Again, they've responded wonderfully. I guess I won't know. I don't expect them to be proud of it. I don't think it factors in that way.
Because it's a lot for your parents to take. Their only son and daughter.
Exactly. Well, no, we've got a younger sister.
Oh, you've got a younger sister.
Yes.
Okay. So they're going to pray that she's not
gay. We threatened her and said no. by our understanding, she is straight. And so if that is relief for our parents, then that's fine. But it is a lot of pressure, especially given, like, my mum is from a big family. We've got cousins getting married in the traditional sense, left, right and centre. And I know that she wishes that for us.
Yeah. And how do they explain it? Because Indian families are very much into the weddings and getting the son married off.
Yes, I know that my mum has talked with some of her sisters and her brother, but I haven't asked her about those conversations and... I hope that she knows if she wants to talk to us that she can.
She can.
You're on Joy 94.9 with Leo and Hugh on Dribbin this afternoon. Our special guest, Justin, is still with us. Now, Justin, you are also, like your sister, a bit of a foodie. Yes. You're involved with food and wine and you belong to a cheese club.
Yes.
Tell us about all that.
We come from a very foodie family. I'm sure my sister said this and I'll reiterate, my mum is one of the world's great cooks.
She did, yeah.
Dad is one of the world's great eaters. He doesn't really cook. And so, you know, we've always appreciated food. And when my sister had moved overseas and then when she moved here to Melbourne before I did, she was getting into going out to restaurants and I was doing that in Adelaide with my friends. And then when we moved in together, we both quickly recognised that we had this strong appreciation for food, all sorts of food. And over the years, it's become more expensive food and wine as well. And again, that was a rare thing for an Indian family to be introduced to wine at a young age. But my dad grew up very Western and that was something that he had as part of his upbringing. So,
yeah, we appreciated that early. To the Yarra Valley every so often and
yes, one of my best friends, Kristen, and I, we like to go up on most public holidays or go down to the Yarra Valley and have a bit of lunch and buy a little bit of wine. And, I mean, that for me is probably the most enjoyable way to spend a weekend.
And you're also a cheese club as well.
Yes, and the cheese club my sister started and I was there alongside and we basically try, we theme it each every 6 weeks or every 2 months when we have a meeting according to a culture. So it might be French, it might be Italian, Basque, Pyrenees we had because there are some great European cheeses and yeah, you can almost never get to trying all of them. And yeah, it's a really relaxed thing, but I've got my little book where I document all the notes that we take and yeah, hope I'll bury it one day and it'll be found in some archives.
Now, finally, Justin, obviously partners on the horizon. You're single at the moment.
So yes, I'm single. I've, continually exploring options. Haven't found anybody significant yet, but
studio because there's three of us together.
We wish you all the best, Justin, and thank you so much for joining us today on the Orange Ribbon. It's been a pleasure having you in the studio and sharing your story and your music.
Well, that's thank Orange you. Ribbon for another week. Our thanks to Justin for taking time out to have a chat with us. Also, thanks to everyone on reception this afternoon for helping us. Orange Ribbon will be back again 4 o'clock next Saturday. I'm not really sure what the subject is next week, but I'm sure it'll be a great show.
It'll be a surprise.
Yeah. But thanks for listening and have a great week.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.